It's the pattern is actually photographs of people. Let's see what it says. Lawrence, this outfit is making me facepalm. Oh, SCIUTTO. No deal for me. Weber, he's a man of many faces. All right, that's all the time that we have for fashion police. I appreciate you bearing with me. Celebrities and pop culture is not my thing, but I was filling in today. So thank you for your patience. That concludes today's reading of Us Weekly. This has been Melissa Wood for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American's Business and Oil and Lifestyle sections, followed by Far West Texas News at 7. Now airing on the Noon Book Hour, The Street Lawyer by John Grisham. Michael Brock is billing the hours, making the money, rushing relentlessly to the top of Drake and Sweeney, a giant D.C. law firm. One step away from partnership, Michael has it all. Then in an instant, it all comes undone. A homeless man takes 9 lawyers hostage in the firm's plush offices. When it's all over, the man's blood is splattered on Michael's face. And suddenly, Michael is willing to do the unthinkable. Rediscovering a conscience he lost long ago, Michael is leaving the big time for the streets where his attacker once lived and where society's powerless need an advocate for justice. But there's one break Michael can't make. From a secret that has floated up from the depths of Drake and Sweeney, from a confidential file that is now in Michael's hands, and from a conspiracy that has already taken lives. Now Michael's former partners are about to become his bitter enemies, because to them, Michael Brock is the most dangerous man on the streets. The Street Lawyer by John Grisham, weekdays at noon and 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 62 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 70s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 90s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, May 1st. Sour Gas Solution. New midstream firm opens to treat sour gas. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Two industry veterans are tackling the dual issues of sour gas in the northeastern portion of the Delaware Basin, specifically Lee County, New Mexico, and flaring. Stephen Green and Justin Bennett founded Pinon Midstream LLC in partnership with Black Bay Energy Capital to develop the Greenfield Dark Horse Sour Gas Treating and Carbon Capture Facility and associated pipeline infrastructure in Lee County. The facility is expected to be fully complete by July. It is being underwritten by a substantial long-term dedication from another anchor producer, Amaretto II LLC. Quote, "We were motivated by the potential to provide a much-needed solution to a constrained region of the Delaware Basin," Bennett, Chief Commercial Officer and co-founder, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Continuing the quote, "Our mutual experience in natural gas infrastructure, and more specifically, amine treating plants, made this opportunity a great fit for our skill sets. With the growing emphasis that the oil and gas industry is placing on ESG initiatives, we viewed Pinon as a way to be ahead of the curve by proactively providing a carbon capture and sequestration service to our customers," end quote. He and Green also believe it will have the added benefit of drastically reducing flaring in the region. Dark Horse has the dual function of removing the hydrogen sulfide and carbon dioxide from the gas and sequestering them down the Independence AGI No. 1, an 18,000-foot sequestration well within the facility that is the deepest and largest capacity well of its kind in New Mexico and one of the deepest in the basin. The well has the ability to sequester up to 175,000 tons of CO2 and 75,000 tons of H2S annually. That capacity will double next year when the second Independence AGI well is drilled. The remaining sweet gas is sent to gas processing plants down a new 20-inch, 20-mile pipeline. The project has 30,000 horsepower of full NACE field compression, and when it operates at full capacity, beginning in July, can treat approximately 85 million cubic feet of sour gas per day. The company has purchased a second amine treating plant that is scheduled to be installed and operational in the fourth quarter, increasing treating capacity to 170 million cubic feet per day. The facility is expandable to treat up to 400 million cubic feet of sour gas per day. Piñon's business model is to permanently remove and sequester the CO2, but Bennett said he and Green are looking at ways to enter the carbon capture, utilization, and storage market. Quote, "We are currently evaluating some of the CO2 utilization options that are available out there. The tricky thing for Piñon is that we are removing and sequestering H2S in addition to the CO2. Unlike sequestration, CO2 utilization requires pure CO2, so we have some added cost to separate out the H2S, which isn't impossible, but requires some more engineering and planning on our side," he said. He said he and Green are watching some tax credits and proposed bills that would help midstream operators subsidize some of those costs. Though the company was only formed last December, response has been overwhelmingly positive, according to Bennett. And it's not just from potential producer customers, but area midstream gas processors, he said. Quote, "Piñon is providing a win-win scenario for all parties involved by unlocking natural gas that would have otherwise been constrained," he said. "We provide a means for upstream companies to produce their constrained assets and a means for midstream companies to process this incremental gas that was previously shut in or being flared off," end quote. While the company is currently focused on the northeastern portion of the Delaware Basin, Bennett said Piñon is also looking at serving other areas, including the Midland Basin. Quote, "Absolutely," he said. "We found a niche in the midstream business that we like and are actively looking for other challenged areas that could benefit from a comprehensive sour gas solution. We would love to visit with anyone that is challenged with sour gas outside of our initial service area in the northeastern Delaware Basin," end quote. Railroad Commission continues to exceed well-plugging targets. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Tasked with carrying out the state's well-plugging program, the Railroad Commission is again exceeding expectations. The agency says it is on track to exceed the target of plugging 1,400 wells this fiscal year, set by the Texas legislature. This would make the fifth consecutive year the agency has exceeded the target set by the legislature. Already, the agency has plugged 1,083 wells with 4 months to go. While agency managers couldn't pinpoint a specific date for meeting the goal, they tell the Reporter-Telegram by email that, with more than 75% of the goal already being met, the target should be met before the August 31st end of the fiscal year. Quote, "With the current well-plugging rate set to exceed our legislative goal for this fiscal year, I am proud of the Railroad Commission's commitment to health and safety standards in Texas, Christy Craddock, commission chair, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Continuing the quote, "Ensuring that wells are plugged in a timely, safe, and responsible manner has always been a priority for me and the agency and will continue to be important as we move forward. I appreciate our staff who work hard to identify, assess, and plug abandoned wells, and the legislature for continuing to fund this critical program." End quote. Railroad Commission Director of Field Operations Clay Woodall said in a statement announcing the achievement, quote, "We picked up our pace plugging wells in recent months. During the last fiscal year, the pandemic posed special challenges to ensure the safety of contractors plugging wells and Railroad Commission field staff overseeing those operations, but we have clear protocols in place to ensure the work can proceed in a timely manner," end quote. In addition, Andrew Kesey, spokesman for the agency, told the Reporter Telegram, "The achievement has roots in improvements to the state managed plugging program made several years ago when staff took a close look at the program and streamlined internal processes. That," Kesey said, "along with improved employee retention, has contributed to its success exceeding legislative goals. This fiscal year, the Railroad Commission has collaborated with the National Park Service to help plug 11 wells at the Padre Island National Seashore near Corpus Christi. The work was performed between January and March. Funding for the Padre Island National Seashore project came from the Gulf Coast Ecosystem Restoration Council." Quote, "This is a win for our state and all Texans," said Wee Wang, Railroad Commission Executive Director, in a statement. Quote, "These wells on federal land were not part of the state's well-plugging program, but Padre Island National Seashore sought out the Railroad Commission because of our expertise in overseeing plugging projects. Our collaborative work with the park not only helps protect a natural treasure for future generations to enjoy, but it also helps provide jobs for some of our state's oil and gas workers," end quote. The state-managed plugging program is funded through oil and gas industry revenue, including, but not limited to, well-plugging reimbursements, fees, and financial securities paid by the industry. Upstream employment continues to grow. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Recovery is flowing through the economy, which grew at a 6.4% rate in the first quarter, the government says, and that is being seen in the energy economy. The Texas Oil and Gas Association reported that the upstream sector of the state's oil and gas industry added jobs for the third consecutive month in March. Citing data from the Texas Workforce Commission, TXOGA said the sector added 4,300 jobs in March, the largest single month-over-month gain since the summer of 2011. Quote, "As the global pandemic recedes and our state, nation, and world transition back into normalcy, the need for abundant, affordable, and reliable oil and natural gas will return with it," Todd Staples, president of the association, told a Reporter Telegram by email. Continuing the quote, "The Texas oil and natural gas industry will always need bright minds of women and men who will continue to contribute to its work and pioneer the cutting-edge technology that is leading to a cleaner energy future," end quote. Staples said the Workforce Commission data showed the most growth in the support activities for mining category, typically jobs in oil field services. Since the low point for the combined upstream industry seen last September, employment in support activities for mining has risen by 14,200 jobs, he said. The increase brings total upstream employment in Texas to 169,700 jobs, according to Staples, who said the sector has shown job gains in five of the past 6 months. and he maintains an optimistic outlook. Quote, oil and natural gas will continue to play an essential role in environmental progress and the energy and economic strength of Texas, providing power, products, high-paying jobs, and billions in government revenues for decades to come, he said. Continuing the quote, positive trends in the oil and natural gas industry benefit every Texan, whether you live near the oil patch or not, end quote.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 2nd, 2021. Venezuela, American style. Quote, it's a dagger pointed at the heart of free enterprise. By Kim Strassel. The Chamber's bill comes due. By Dennis Elam. Dennis Elam is an associate professor at Texas A&M and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. The dagger is the across-the-board whopping increase in tax rates. Last week, we compared the across-the-board Team Biden hike in tax rates to an attempt to kill the golden goose. The golden goose is the never-before-imagined new highs in the stock market, as well as pre-COVID record employment levels. It did not take long for those in the know to issue similar warnings. Larry Lindsey, former Fed governor, member of the National Economic Council, etc., opined that the best tax rate, the one that reaps the most dollars, is about 18% on corporations, not 28 to 29%. Now, let's examine a bit of history. America had high confiscatory tax rates from the 1950s to 1985. Then Reagan finally convinced Tip O'Neill that lower rates would involve less legal wrangling and bring in more money. At the point, the DJIA was trading around 2,500. Lowering the top rate from 50% to 28% brought immediate results. After the short bear market of 1987, the DJIA kept climbing right into year 2000. So why is Team Biden ignoring history now? The answer is that the National Chamber of Commerce and various corporations endorsed 23 freshman Democrats in the 2020 election. They bet on bipartisanship that it ended badly. There is no such thing as a moderate Democrat. 20 of the 23 voted to abolish right-to-work laws in states that have them. More votes for a $15 minimum wage and repeal of the 2017 corporate tax reform followed. Recall that the lower corporate tax rates helped energize the economy. The various stock indexes are hanging around recent highs, but one day's gain seems to be the next day's loss. Crude oil broke out to a new high Thursday, but gave back the gain today. I suspect that is a test of the breakout. Reports indicate possible gasoline shortages this summer as demand grows worldwide post-COVID. Exxon has joined the climate change frenzy, focusing on the Houston refineries. Plans are now underway to bury those nasty emissions in the strata of the Gulf of Mexico. Sounds like the Chamber of Commerce courting favor, hoping to be spared by the federal alligator regulators. Team Biden is enjoying the final arc high of the stock market, which took off with the 2017 Tax Reform Act. Best guess is that it will continue into this summer. Venezuela, American style. Quote, it's a dagger pointed at the heart of free enterprise. by Kim Strassel. The Chamber's Bill Comes Due. By Dennis Elam. Dennis Elam is an associate professor at Texas A&M and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. The dagger is the across-the-board whopping increase in tax rates. Last week, we compared the across-the-board Team Biden hike in tax rates to an attempt to kill the golden goose. The golden goose is the never-before-imagined new highs in the stock market, as well as pre-COVID record employment levels. It did not take long for those in the know to issue similar warnings. Larry Lindsey, former Fed governor, member of the National Economic Council, etc., opined that the best tax rate, the one that reaps the most dollars, is about 18% on corporations, not 28 to 29%. Now, let's examine a bit of history. America had high confiscatory tax rates from the 1950s to 1985. Then Reagan finally convinced Tip O'Neill that lower rates would involve less legal wrangling and bring in more money. At the point, the DJIA was trading around 2,500. Lowering the top rate from 50% to 28% brought immediate results. After the short bear market of 1987, the DJIA kept climbing right into year 2000. So why is Team Biden ignoring history now? The answer is that the National Chamber of Commerce and various corporations endorsed 23 freshman Democrats in the 2020 election. They bet on bipartisanship that it ended badly. There is no such thing as a moderate Democrat. 20 of the 23 voted to abolish right-to-work laws in states that have them. More votes for a $15 minimum wage and repeal of the 2017 corporate tax reform followed. Recall that the lower corporate tax rates helped energize the economy. The various stock indexes are hanging around recent highs, but one day's gain seems to be the next day's loss. Crude oil broke out to a new high Thursday, but gave back the gain today. I suspect that is a test of the breakout. Reports indicate possible gasoline shortages this summer as demand grows worldwide post-COVID. Exxon has joined the climate change frenzy, focusing on the Houston refineries. Plans are now underway to bury those nasty emissions in the strata of the Gulf of Mexico. Sounds like the Chamber of Commerce courting favor, hoping to be spared by the federal alligator regulators. Team Biden is enjoying the final arc high of the stock market, which took off with the 2017 Tax Reform Act. Best guess is that it will continue into this summer.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, May 1st. Could oil prices be headed back to upper 50s? By Mella McEwen. Crude prices closed the books on an April that saw them boosted by increasing confidence in global economic recovery and oil demand. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Exchange gained 7.5%. during the month and ended the final week of April with a 2.3% gain, according to Bloomberg. Still, prices ended the week by sinking $1.43 to close at $63.58 per barrel, ending a three-day winning streak. Prices closed Monday at $61.91 per barrel. The posted price ended the week at $60.06, according to Plains All American. Natural gas on the New York MEX had a positive week, rising four of five trading days. prices closed Friday at $2.93 per MCF, up 2 cents and up from $2.79 at Monday's close. WTI has traded in a relatively narrow range since February. We're not quite out of that range, at least not yet, even with recent gains. Timothy Fitzgerald, Associate Professor, Business Economics of Texas Tech's Rawls College of Business, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Fitzgerald offered a short-term and a long-term view of oil prices. Short-term fluctuations, he said, are harder to explain than the long-term story. Commercial crude oil inventories have drawn down over the past few weeks. That might be the best short-term explanation that I can think of, he said. He continued, the longer-term story is more relevant and interesting in my view, and has a lot to do with gradual opening up of the U.S. economy. We had a very strong advance first quarter GDP number, 6.4% at an annualized rate. WTI was up $1 today, Thursday, providing some credence to the short-term good news view. Maybe it will be enough to break out of the range we've had since February, when vaccines started to become a bit more widely available. The flip side to that bullish view is that the oil price depends on global economic conditions, and it seems that the pandemic is not quite done with the rest of the world. Reports of Chinese growth, while still high by developed economy standards, are somewhat more modest than what we've seen in recent years, he said. Fitzgerald said even the 6.4% advance first quarter GDP figure was below some of the more optimistic forecasts that were out there, citing the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now, which was 8.1 or 8.2%, and granted that that methodology is not perfect. In summary, he concluded, my thought is that prices have been boosted a bit by growing domestic momentum, but the uneven global recovery is likely to keep a lid on the upside, at least for now. Steve Pruitt, President and Chief Executive Officer of Elevation Resources, told the Reporter-Telegram by email he believes oil prices above $60 feel unsustainable, given the fragile supply-demand balance. He pointed to plans by the members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allied Producing Nations to restore 2.1 million barrels of oil per day of its cuts from May to July, at which time cuts to reported OPEC plus capacity will still be 5.8 million barrels per day. Higher prices encourage members to cheat, which is bound to happen, he said, while the Biden administration's hints toward removing sanctions on Iran will put another 1.5 million barrels per day on the market. On the demand side, China reports its oil demand is well above pre-COVID levels, but India is struggling with a surge in COVID infections and deaths, and its petroleum product demand remains well below pre-COVID levels due to renewed lockdowns on travel, Pruitt said. He concluded, I think oil will trade back into the high 50s until the post-COVID recovery is more visible. Bloomberg reported that the near-certain likelihood of higher fuel consumption in the U.S., China, and the U.K. has brightened the overall demand outlook, even as a resurgent pandemic in countries such as India, Brazil, and Japan cloud those prospects. OPEC and its allies see world consumption rebounding by 6 million barrels a day this year, while Goldman Sachs Group Inc. this week said demand could post a record jump as vaccination rates increase. The U.S. is going to lead the demand recovery, and now that COVID cases are declining across most of Western Europe, there's excitement around a strong pickup in global economic activity and improved air travel in the coming months. Edward Moya, senior market analyst at Awanda Corp, told Bloomberg. But to take out the March highs, the situation in India needs to be heading in the right direction.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org. Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 2nd, 2021. Life and Times. Former longtime Odessan celebrates 104 years. Fran Rice, a former longtime Odessan, recently celebrated her 104th birthday. Courtesy photo. Rice was a prolific writer of letters to the editor by Anita Reed, special to the Odessa American. When Fran Rice was born on April 27, 1917, between Sherman and Denison in Grayson County, Texas, Woodrow Wilson was president. World War I had seen more than 2.5 years of conflict, and the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918 was poised to sweep across the continents. In April, Fran celebrated her 104th birthday. She enjoys talking about her childhood years, passionately discusses presidents and politics, and is keenly informed on the current pandemic that threatened to cancel her 103rd birthday party. Texas to Kansas, Fran, only recently a Kansan, lived